Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now, it's time for Question Mark.
Hit us up on the Ramos Law.com text line 303-713-1043 with the hashtag question mark, and we'll bounce your questions off Stink. I got one to start us off. Heard Alfred Williams yesterday really getting fired up on the drive that something along those lines, Ben. He was talking about the fact that it's a flat-out mistake that the Denver Broncos organization has not given its most relied upon group a full-time coach. That DeMarcus Ware consultant role, that's great, but it's like having a luxury car and not putting the premium fuel in it. Where do you come out on how the Broncos have chosen to go about this?
Yeah, it's an interesting take, and, you know, I'll defer to Al's knowledge there, but I think that there would be a benefit. And I know that you get so many guys on a coaching staff, and there's, you know, I mean, you get to the point where you got everybody's a specialist. But that position, that outside linebacker position, is, you know, 60% defensive end, rushing the passer, which DeMarcus Ware could certainly help that aspect out. But I think the biggest part of it, let's call that 60%, is the 40% where you're not. The 40% of your zone drops and your man coverage schemes and all that kind of stuff. And I think that would be a real benefit to those guys, because they're asked to play, they're essentially asked to have duality in that they play two different positions. I'd be really interested to see how some of the other teams have handled that. Like, I'd be really interested to see, and I know people get sick of me talking about the New England Patriots, but I'd like to see how they've handled that over the years. Because, or the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have played a traditional 3-4, did the Steelers have a outside linebacker coach as well as a linebacker coach? You know, an inside-outside. They decided to go with two offensive line coaches, kind of an inside guy and a tackles coach. So I'd really be interested to see how other teams have approached kind of that position, because there are kind of two positions in one there.
Sure.
And that is it's a really interesting take by my man, a Big Al. So I think it's something that makes me think.
There's a couple different people on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, that said, hey, you know, watching DeMarcus Ware out there made me think of you, Stink. Why haven't you helped the Broncos? And maybe I'll even broaden that. Have you thought about coaching in the past, present, future?
Yeah, you know, this came up yesterday. I have the last several years in a row turned down coaching jobs.
In the league?
In the NFL, yes. I've been approached. I've been approached by multiple teams over the years. The Broncos approached me right when I retired with Mike Shanahan. But since that point, they have not approached me about doing anything of that nature, although I have worked with some of the young guys. I worked exclusively for a long time, or for a while, not a long time, but for a while with Ben Garland, who's now the starter in Atlanta.
Right.
So Ben used to come over to the house all the time. We worked on a ton of stuff. So, and I had several other guys, several young players that would come over and that I would, you know, talk football with and help them think about, again, the nuance of playing the game. And I think those things are valuable. And like I said, I've had multiple coaching offers the last several years from different organizations to come. But again, it just is always been one of those situations where if you're going to do it, you got to commit to doing it. And you know, had it been the Broncos, maybe it'd be a different situation for me, because I wouldn't have to move my family. You know,
like if John called you and said, like, hey, Elway, we really need to sit down and talk to you.
If Elway called me and said, listen, I really want you to come be a part of the organization, then that would be great. I think
That's too bad.
Yeah, I think that part of that too is John knows that financially I do pretty well for myself,
yeah,
and that I'm not going to take a pay cut. And so, you know, would they be able to offer me the kind of money that I make, and, you know, not to come into a consulting role? I don't know what they're paying DeMarcus Ware, but I just don't think they could offer me enough money to make it worth leaving for.
Kind of a big deal.
I don't know. I mean, I would definitely have the conversation.
Yeah. Here's another good one. On the RamosLaw.com text line, hashtag question mark. Who has a greater chance of being cut from last year's draft class? Carlos Henderson or D'Angelo Henderson?
Oh, Carlos Henderson. Carlos Henderson hasn't seen the field. I mean, D'Angelo Henderson got an opportunity to play in the last game of the season. And he actually looked really good.
He did.
So, he was a guy that lit it up in training camp and then for some reason fell off the face of the map. I have no idea why. Maybe it was because they were
hell-bent
for election. They gave Charles, you know, $1 million or whatever it was to come here, and they were they were dead set on getting him some playing time. And but D'Angelo Henderson was legit in training camp and stuff, and when he got that opportunity, so I think he'll definitely make that. He'll definitely make that team.
It's a packed room though, because and there's not enough room for everyone, because you got Devontae Booker, you drafted Royce Freeman this year. You got David Williams, another drafted player this year. You got Philip Lindsay, a priority free agent, as well as Henderson. And then you throw in Janovich. How many running backs do you think they'll end up keeping on the 53?
5,825.
How many have they kept in the past? So last year they kept Jamal Charles, Booker, C.J. Anderson, Andy Janovich, right?
Yep.
And then they had a couple guys that were inactive.
Right.
So they probably kept, what, five total running backs? Five or six?
I think five.
Yeah.
I don't remember six ever at one point. Could have happened, but I remember five.
Right. Okay, so I would look at them, you know, I would look at them doing the same thing. I mean, obviously, Royce Freeman is going to be there. Booker will probably make it. D'Angelo Henderson will probably make it, and Andy Janovich will probably make it, and then there's going to be one special teams kind of back that they need to figure out.
Between David Williams and Philip Lindsay.
Philip Lindsay, yeah. And maybe Philip Lindsay, you know, maybe Philip Lindsay is their kind of go-to nickel guy. So we'll see, but I think that's the way you would look at that kind of unfolding.
Boy, if Carlos Henderson never works out for the Broncos, there'll always be a piece of me that says, you know, what could have been. Because Carlos Henderson, you talk about a dynamic athlete, and I know this is along the lines of your, you know, draft football players who are also athletes, not athletes who happen to play football. But Carlos Henderson, he was the offensive player of the year in the Conference USA. In the same season, he was special teams player of the year. He's top 10 at the combine in vertical, in broad jump. He was a big play waiting to happen. And it just seems like so quickly he's found himself on the outside looking in, on the verge of being that rare guy who's cut about 400 days after he's drafted.
Yeah. And he was a guy, too, and this is not, like, this is not the Broncos and John Elway giving the coaches enough to work with. Here's a guy, when you watched him on film, I mean, all he did was made plays.
Yeah.
That guy was a playmaker at, what was it, Louis?
La Tech, yep.
Yeah, La Tech, right? So, I mean, he was all over the place on film. I mean, I loved him. I loved the pick. And just snake bitten for whatever reason, and it's just been a really tough transition for him, and injuries and the whole nine yards. But he was the goods in college. But I mean, again, you hang around this league long enough, and you play long enough, and then you cover it long enough, you're going to see a lot of great college football players that just get overwhelmed at the next level. I mean, just simply overwhelmed, whatever it is, whether it's trying to get themselves healthy, trying to get themselves right. You know, some guys are what I like to call 100 percenters. Can't play unless they're 100%. And they're allowed to do that in college? Hey, listen, if you're 100%er, you're not going to play long in the NFL because you've got to not only play hurt, you got to play injured, and you got to play well hurt and injured. And if you don't, you're just not going to last. And so you can't be 100%er. You can't be a guy that's going, oh, I'm just not quite there yet. I'll tell you a quick story. You probably don't remember this name. A guy by the name of Darren Bragg played Major League Baseball for a long time. Played for the Reds, played for the Rockies, played all over the place. So Darren Bragg is with the Rockies, and this is back when the Rockies used to do spring training in Tucson. And every year I would take my son to Tucson, and it's so funny that he's with the Seattle Mariners right now, and I'm just believing that he's going to get an opportunity to get to the big leagues again. But their manager, Scott Service, was the Rockies' catcher. And my son Daniel would always go down to spring training, and Scott Service would actually catch him in bullpens.
Mm, that's pretty cool.
It's just a really cool thing, right? So anyhow, we're hanging out, and Service catches Daniel in bullpen, and we're doing whatever, and hanging out, and we're going to the locker room, and I actually helped the equipment manager put the Mississippi mud on the balls. So I don't know if you know this, but the Major League Baseball has this tub of mud from the Mississippi. It's a literal tub of mud. It's got the Major League Baseball, the signia on it and everything else. And so they send you this tub of mud, and it's a certain color, and the equipment guys actually put the mud on the baseballs. So the baseballs, when they get them, they're white leather.
Right.
And they rub them down with this mud. It's a certain mud from the Mississippi, and it dulls them up. And every ball is, so I have actually put the Mississippi mud on Major League Baseballs for Major League Baseball games.
I had no idea that this existed.
Yeah. So it's kind of a ritual thing, right? So when you see them, they're a little bit brown. The baseballs are a little bit brown. So it's kind of crazy. Anyhow, we're in there and I'm in the locker room and I'm doing my stuff, and there's Darren Bragg. And knowing that I played for the Broncos and I had a bunch of injuries, he comes up to talk to me about his injury history and all this kind of stuff and what's going on. He's recovering from an ACL. And I'm like, how's it going? And he's like, oh, you know, it's okay. I'm just not quite there yet. And so unsolicited, I say, hey, would you take a piece of advice? I don't want to offend you, but would you take a piece of advice? He goes, yeah, anyway. I said, let me just tell you something just about recovering from injuries. I go, have they cleared you to play? Have they cleared you 100% to play? He goes, yes, they have. I go, I'm just not quite there yourself right out of this league. I go, you have to reestablish what 100% is. It may be 80% of what it used to be, but it's 100% now.
Mm.
And you got to go out and play. And if you don't do that, your career is going to be very short-lived. And I go, that's just my experience. So being friends, thank you. I see him like 3 years later. And I think he's playing for the Reds at this time. And he goes, dude, thank you so much. You saved my career. Like, I would have never mentally been able to get over it had we not had that discussion.
Wow.
And so for Carlos Henderson, you damn well better learn if your hamstring's still bothering you, better learn how to play on it. And you better learn how to play well on it. And if you don't, you know what? You're going to be one of those guys that sits around on your couch at 40 and goes, I don't know what happened. I just never could get, over this injury, whatever. So you've got to figure that out. That's on you.
Man, oh, man. And for Carlos, he's got a couple things working against him at once. The first being that he was essentially redshirted his rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
It was way behind in terms of just the playbook and suffered an injury, and so he got shut down for the year. The Broncos go back in the draft the same way that they did for his class. Those guys happen to come in, play really, really well, Deshaun
right.
Hamilton, Courtland Sutton, at the same time where he can't get on the field. I mean, so... And then you look at we talk about the running back room stink. Look at the receiving group. I mean, you have Isaiah McKenzie, Carlos Henderson, Courtland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton, Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, Jordan Taylor, Tim Patrick. All these guys aren't gonna play.
And
I think you'll like this story. My college basketball coach used to hand us all a piece of paper at the start of the season, all 12 guys. and say, how many minutes do you think that you're going to play this year? And we'd all write down the amount of minutes that we envisioned ourselves playing.
Right.
He'd collect the papers, add up the minutes, and there'd be about 250 more minutes than there is eligible to be played in a game.
Right.
And he would just say, this is what you envisioned. It all is not going to happen. And I think about Carlos Henderson and maybe one or two other receivers in that room that you're not going to dress out eight wide receivers on a Sunday. And they're certainly, and the ones that you do dress out aren't all going to have success and all be featured. So Carlos Henderson, man, he hasn't helped himself, but he's partly a victim of circumstance in terms of the room and his injury and the timeliness of it.
Yeah, and with that said, it's too bad. Bottom line is right. Nobody really cares. And honestly, you know, you hate to be that callous, but nobody cares. I always tell young players all the time, you know, guys that play in this league, and it's just interesting. You're going to retire, and very few people are going to remember that you played, and even less are going to care. There's not a lot of transferable skills from running down on kickoff cover and blowing up a wedge. Like, that doesn't transfer to the real world, right? And so you gotta make the most of playing in this league, the opportunity that you've been given, and you gotta go out there and you've gotta play. And the thing about Carlos Henderson is he could completely change the trajectory of his career by just going out and getting busy. Going out and opening up eyes. And you've got an opportunity because no matter what happened in OTAs and minicamp, that's going to hold absolutely zero value compared to what you do in training camp. And if you come out in training camp and light it up, guess what? All the importance of phase two and phase three and all that baloney that we talk about and all that we've been talking about the last month, none of that is going to matter. It's not going to matter one iota. So you still have the opportunity to change everybody's opinion the first day of training camp. You can come light it up in the first day and then the second day and you put three or four back-to-back days on and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, here's our guy.
You're back in the mix.
Right. And that's what's got to happen for him because right now, you know, he's on the depth chart wise, he's on the outside looking in. Hammy. Can't play hurt. Can't play tweaked. And I tell you what, there's a badge of honor that comes to playing hurt, and there's also the opposite of whatever a badge of honor is. Like you're labeled soft.
Yeah.
The worst word in football. When the trainers will be like, hey, listen, yeah, he's got a hammy. Yeah, we've treated it. Yeah. It's playable, and yeah, he's a 100%er, and he just can't get over it. And I don't know what they're saying about Carlos, but if those are the things that are being said, he's like you've got a huge hurdle to overcome before you get to play because they're already looking at you as, can we count on him? Hey, in week nine, and he gets tweaked. Is he going to be out for eight games or six games, or is he not going to be able to answer the bell? Is he not going to be able to perform? Like those things, you're creating a situation where they're going to talk about you in those, kind of in those forms.
Here's another one on the RamosLaw.com text line. Hit us up, 303-713-1043. Someone asking about another wide receiver, Isaiah McKenzie, a much maligned figure from a year ago. What does Isaiah McKenzie have to do to win back over Broncos country?
He's got to hold on to the ball. You know, he's going to get an opportunity. You're going to get an opportunity to, you know, not only as a third wide receiver, but also as a, you know, a third wide receiver and also as a guy that, you know, that may get to be in the mix in the return game. And the bottom line is you just got to end up with the ball every time. Like, the one thing Isaiah can't do is can't go, okay, I've got to be spectacular every time I catch the ball
right. That
I can make sure that I win everybody over. Yeah, there's a book out there. It's called The Art of Not Giving an F, right? And that's hard to do. Like, it's a really hard thing to not care. Because everybody does.
Sure.
But there's an art form to it. You have to be able to drown out the noise of all your critics. You've got to be able to kind of adhere to the philosophy of wolves don't concern themselves with the opinion of sheep. And the bottom line for you is you've got to catch the ball, and you've got to do what you can do with the ball. But the bottom line is every time the play is over, you have to possess the ball. And trust that in that, somewhere, you're going to do something spectacular. But you can't go, I've got to be spectacular on this return so that I can win back the fan base and I can win back the trust of the coaches. No, you've got to secure the ball so that you can win back the trust of the coaches. And eventually, if you secure the ball enough times, there's going to be an opportunity to have a breakout. And then when that comes, you got to take it. But you have to, at the end of every play, possess the ball. Because you put it on the ground one time, and that's going to be the only time you get. That's going to be your only chance.
So that's the threshold for Isaiah in year two. After fumbling five times his rookie year,
right,
you get one fumble. And if you fumble, if you muffle punt,
well, see you
sat
later.
Back down.
Yeah, you're not gonna get to play anymore. Now, let's say you go through 6 weeks as the returner, and you do a great job possessing the ball, and you know you make some huge plays and some huge special teams plays for us, and you get blown up by a dude, and the ball comes out. That's a different story. But
you need to show competence.
Week one, you're dancing around out there like you're want to do, and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and like we've seen him in the past, and all of a sudden you make a move, and whoo, Butterfingers comes out. You'll never return another ball for that organization, ever. You'll never get another chance.
And he can't afford it, neither can Vance.
No.
Because after that point, if it's beyond one fumble, then the plate, I take it from in front of Isaiah, right, and move it in front of Vance.
You want to see how... like how ballsy Vance is. Like, let's see who the returner is on week one.
Right.
Right? I mean, let's
stick
let's,
his neck out there if it's Isaiah.
Right. If it's Isaiah, you're like, dude, that's onions, man. Like, I'd respect it. Week one of the preseason, there's Isaiah. I'm like, I know the games don't count, but they do matter. You know, they don't count. But that's like, yeah, dude, I like it.
Well, I'll tell you what. If for some reason that doesn't work out, if you want to see a crowd turn on someone.
Oh, my goodness.
It'd be like Hulk Hogan becoming a bad guy again.
Right.
Just the boo birds, man. I could see it. I could see it. I could see a scenario where that plays out.
Right. Isaiah would have to, he would have to be incognito. I don't know what the best costume for Isaiah would be, but he would have to dress up. Like to go out in town, like go to the grocery store, you know, hat, sunglasses. I mean, he would have to be.
Better. Do what you need to do. You got a waitress fumble a drink on you.
Yeah, or, right.
You know, like just, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, Vance doesn't have that kind of equity to be rolling those dice. So I'd be curious if, as to what you said, week one. You know, week one of preseason. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I'm not sure.
If you want to hit us up with more questions for Mark, hit us up with the hashtag question mark on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Stink, next we hear from the star of camp. We're not talking about Bradley Chubb. We'll tell you exactly who it is next. Yesterday we had the chance to hear from the star of camp. Stink, time and time again, and once again, Zach Byfilling from Mike Evans this morning, time and time again, we had heard the name Courtland Sutton and just how terrific of an offseason that he's had, really, in his first offseason. I don't even know if you can call it an offseason for a rookie, but his first OTAs and camp come with rave reviews, and he joined our afternoon show yesterday, Stokely and Zach, and I asked him what it was like
to have the veterans actually call him by his name and not his number.
To have my teammates, especially older guys, vets, recognize me as more than just a number, because the same, like you said, there's a lot of teams around the league, and some of my teammates who've been drafted, they've said the same thing, that they get kind of labeled as just a number. They don't get the appreciation of getting their name called by vets. So to have, especially have guys on defensive line who will call me by name and not just Rook or A14, but have those guys call me by name, it really means a lot, because I know that there, as being a rookie, there's a lot of stripes you got to earn. And so to be able to have those guys call me by name shows that I'm doing something right. And I just want to keep making sure that I'm doing that so that I'm able to help the team in the fall, whichever way I possibly can.
Stink, in normal society, we just call each other by our name.
Mm-hmm.
But is there any higher compliment that a veteran could pay a rookie this time of year than actually know his name?
Know his name? Well, I guess if you gave him a nickname.
Oh, there,
like,
you go.
You know, if you gave him a nickname, then, you know, then the kid has truly earned his stripes, so to speak. So, yeah, I mean, that's part of the deal. You want to earn the respect of the veteran players. One of the things I've loved about this rookie class, and you listen to the maturity of this rookie class, but everybody has mentioned, whether it's Cortland Sutton or whether it's Bradley Chubb, about earning the respect of their teammates. And, you know, even Bradley said yesterday, whether on you and Stokes' show, whether I'm starting or whether I'm backing up and coming up, like, he takes nothing for granted. Like, he understands that he's got to earn his position on this team. He's got to earn his playing time. He's got to earn that respect and those opportunities. And here at Cortland Sutton, I just, whatever my role is, I want to come in here and continue to earn that and continue to prove myself. And that's what you have to have. I mean, those are the things that for me you have to do as a rookie. And that's part of it. And the fact that they know his name and they've given kind of given their thumbs up to what he's done so far. You can't rest on it. You can't all of a sudden go, yes, I've arrived. You can't feel entitled. The one thing about this rookie class is, from the top on down, I don't see anybody that feels entitled, like they've earned anything to this point.
And it couldn't be any more different from last year's class, who entitled is a word that you constantly heard as a label for a handful of those guys. We asked Cortland Sutton expectations that he has for himself going into training camp.
Man, honestly, just to go out and be able to help the team wherever I possibly can, whether it's offensively or special teams, I feel like I bring a unique talent to the team with being 6'4", 220. I feel like I'm a matchup problem offensively and special teams wise. I could get put in some spots where a lot of little guys might play, but with my speed, I'm able to match up and play certain positions that certain guys can't play. And I wound up, like I said, becoming a matchup problem for some people. And then being able to be on the field, hopefully be on the field with DT and E and whoever, being out there to be able to help to contribute wherever I possibly can, whether it's in the run game, the pass game. I feel like I'm really trying to make sure I'm maximizing my opportunity, whether it's in the pass game, in the run game, in special teams, whichever one it might be. I feel like I bring a unique attribute to the team, and I'm excited to be able to bring that in. I think I'm gonna be able to help the team in a very positive way coming this fall.
To your point, there he is. Special teams, run game, how can I help?
Yeah.
What are your expectations, though, for Cortland this year?
I expect him to contribute in all phases. I expect him to contribute on offense, in the run game. I mean, let's face it, the last couple of years, after DT and Emmanuel, we have had nobody contribute.
None.
There's been no consistent contribution made at the receiver position. You know, it's a game here by Fowler, a game here by Jordan Taylor, a game over here. But there has been no consistency. Nobody's contributed. So whether it's as the third wideout, whether it's as the fourth wideout, he mentioned the running game. I expect him to be a guy that contributes both offensively, special teams-wise, and he mentioned that running game. I love the fact that a receiver understands the value and the importance of what they do in the running game. Because it's when you have that kind of attitude, that's when a 5-yarder becomes a 15-yarder, or a 15-yarder becomes a 30-yarder, or a 45, 65, whatever it is,
yard breakout is when those guys absolutely respect that aspect of the game and get themselves involved. And, you know, that to me is understanding not only the game, but being unselfish enough to want to be involved in it. And I fully expect him to be involved in every aspect of it.
This is Cortland Sutton yesterday on Stokely and Zach telling his biggest adjustment so far in the NFL.
Definitely just learning the playbook. I ran a completely different type of offense at SMU than here. I ran a spread offense, so getting into a pro style was clearly different. I remember the first day during rookie OTAs, our little rookie camp, the first time I got into the huddle, I didn't know exactly what to do. I didn't know how to break it. It was really weird not getting the signal from the sideline and lining up in my spot. But that was probably the biggest thing for me was the playbook and then being in the pro style offense. It's completely different than what I had in college. So getting used to that was a little adverse at first, but it's been a lot of fun getting to do it because it's a lot of ins and outs of it that makes it look complicated. But to us, once you learn it, it's not as complicated as it seems.
You talk about a jump from running a spread at SMU. He said the first day of rookie camp, he didn't know how to break a huddle, Stink.
Right.
I mean, he's used to looking at the sideline of like a picture of a, you know, Mario and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And
right.
That was his assignment.
Yeah.
Yeah, just breaking a huddle, just getting in a huddle. Like getting in a huddle, where you line up, listening to the play call, breaking the huddle, trying to read a defense. The other thing that happens to the college players that come out of a spread is that you essentially face, you know, one defense pretty much the whole game because they don't have time to change things up a lot. Like there's not a lot of you're in the same personnel grouping, so you're in the same guys. You try to keep those same DBs on the field the whole time so they can't rotate, and you play with such a frequency that you're hoping to wear those guys out so you can take advantage of somebody deep. But most of the time you're getting some form of zone defense the entirety of the game. And so it's like you're not reading a defense. You're like, okay, hey, we're running slant here or running go here or whatever you're running. You know, we're running a comeback. We're running a dig. Whatever it is, you're just running it because they're in the same defense the whole time. So you don't worry about adjusting your route or the depth of your route based on the coverage that you're getting and all the different nuances that come with playing in a pro style game. And so it's dramatic for a lot of those kids coming out of that style of offense. All of a sudden having to listen to the play call, to understand what the route and the route combination is, to understand what the adjustments to that route are. Depending upon what defense you're getting, if you break that route at 15 or if you push it to 18 because you're getting zone versus man, all that different stuff that goes on when you're calling plays at that level.
So all that being said, do we need to temper our enthusiasm around Cortland Sutton? Or does he have enough raw natural ability to sort of decrease his curve in learning all that?
I think anytime you bring a rookie receiver in, I mean, we saw it last year with John Ross in Cincinnati who couldn't even sniff the field, Corey Davis in Tennessee who really struggled making that transition. Corey was a fifth overall. I think John Ross was maybe eighth or 12th overall.
He's right there in that area.
So we saw some guys really struggle. I think the one thing that you can do as a coaching staff, and this will be on Bill Musgrave, is you can give them packages. So you can give them opportunities, okay, in nickel. You're going to be in our nickel package, and these are the essential routes you're going to run. And so you give them, you know, you give them portions that they can handle, and you let them build on that. And then you, as the season goes on, you give them a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. So I think a lot of that has to do with how you coach a guy as opposed to giving him the entirety of the offense like you did with Corey Davis and say, all right, now go be our number one. Well, it's really hard to do. And I think a lot of guys struggle with that. So I think a lot of that is the coaching. How can you give your guys what they can handle?
It is a Breakfast Club Friday morning. We're down here at Sam's number 3 downtown. Come say hello if you are anywhere near us this morning. Stink, OTAs and minicamp officially in the rearview mirror. Our biggest takeaways next. All right, Mark. Now that OTAs and minicamp are in the rearview mirror, what was your biggest takeaway from the last 4 weeks?
Oh, I think for me the biggest takeaway is obviously solving the conundrum at quarterback over the last 2 years. You know, having a guy out there that gives you that stability. Stability is very important, but the reason stability is important because it gives you an opportunity to develop an identity. I mean, if you said, okay, last 2 years, what's the identity of this offense? You know, the identity of this offense is, hey, we lead the league in three and outs. Like, we're bad. I mean, they were awful.
Yep.
And there was no identity. There was no ability to say, this is what we're good at. This is what we're going to hang our hats on. And that's, it's important to know who you are. It's important to know what you're good at. It's important to know what you need to avoid, what you're not good at. But you couldn't even figure that out because you had zero offensive identity. You had young players. I know Trevor Siemian seemed like an old soul and an old player, but he was in his second year, for crying out loud. He had the one redshirt year because he's coming off an ACL from his senior year in college. And so we're treating him like he's an eight-year veteran. We're giving him all this stuff, and he frankly couldn't handle it. And you may be able to handle it. You know, it's funny. The thing that hurts smart guys sometimes is they can handle it in the meeting room, and you can handle it when it's on a grease board. And it's really easy to see. But when things are flying around and guys are switching positions and it never, it's always funny because coaches will come to you with a, you know, with a slip of paper and they'll show you the picture from the, you know, back in my day it was a Polaroid, right? They'll show you the Polaroid. Well, here's what they're in. Hey, listen, you can scrap pile that crappy piece of paper you have in your hand because those guys moved. They don't stay. It's not like they have to line up in one spot and go, whoa, 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 time out. You guys are supposed to be in a too high safety look, and that safety is a little bit tighter than normal, and it got me a little confused. So, you know, it's not a legal formation. They can play the amoeba defense. They can be anywhere they want to be, and they can get to wherever they need to go. And so it doesn't ever look like it looks like when you draw it on a grease board. You know, it just doesn't look that way. And so you can be really smart in a meeting room and you roll in or roll out to the football field and it looks 100% different than what you saw in that meeting. And if you have an identity and you know what you are and you know the things you want to hang your hat on, like sometimes you know what's good, you get out of sync offensively, right, and things aren't going the way you want them to go, you roll up on the sideline and go, guys, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go back to our base things, the first things we put in as an offense. Here's our base stuff. We're going to get into this two-tight formation, and we're going to play a little smash mouth. We're going to physically set the tone, and then off of that, once we get our rhythm back, setting the tone, playing a little smash mouth, punching people in the face, now we're going to start opening up again.
Sure.
And sometimes just to fall back on that stuff and go, okay, wait, whoa, timeout. Let's get back to basics and things that we've been executing since we started phase whatever. I don't even know what the phases are, but, you know, I knew the 1, 2, and 3, right?
That's all I know.
Yeah. Well, since phase one, the first thing we put in, the very first day, that's what we hang our hat on. So let's go hang our hat on that stuff. That's kind of how I look at it.
So your biggest takeaway is the fact that the Broncos have sort of put a foundation in, a foundation of an identity, the continuity at quarterback. I'm sure Bill Musgrave has got to love the fact that he's just preparing an offense for one guy's skill set, you know, not dividing your focus in a quarterback.
Right.
I think my biggest takeaway, Stink, was the difference that I saw in Vance Joseph, that a year ago, at this same time, I remember him out there sort of, well, not even sort of, he was in the most literal sense physically trembling at his first handful of press conferences.
Uh-huh.
He said he was confused what to do at practice because he was used to breaking down with positional groups or a phase of the team, and not being a head coach and learning how to coach from that spot. And then he also didn't really have a voice. And figuratively and literally, like, you could go to practice last year and not hear Vance Joseph.
Right.
You're actually hearing him from the sideline now. There was a moment where Paxton was slow getting out of a huddle and setting up, and it was what's going on? Get your bleep together. And I was, whoa, okay.
Right.
You know, I'm hearing a different tenor from Vance and just a more comfortability. And I wonder how far that will go if he can take that step from year one to year two as a coach that you did as a player.
And I think so. I mean, you think about when you're building, you know, when you're building a football team, you know, think about from a construction standpoint, you don't build the building first and then jack it up and try to pour a foundation, right? You pour your foundation, you get your groundwork done first, then you build your footers and you pour your foundation, and then you start with the walls and you build the building from the foundation up. And right now, because they don't have to figure out who the starting quarterback is and try to build the offense around that guy, they're laying the foundation of what they want to be, that identity that they want to have, and they're building it the right way. They're building it from the ground up, and Vance Joseph is a big part of that. And the learning curve, you know, that he went through. I think it's an important aspect of why this team will be better this year. And obviously, if it's not, I mean, if it's not, then he needs to go. I mean, this is ultimately, as we like to say, you know, Clint Hurdle used to say this all the time when he was a coach here, it's not a try-hard league, it's a do-good league. You know, and I don't care how hard you're trying, you got to execute and you got to play well. And if you can't be, like, there is nobody that could ever have said anything about my game that I wasn't 10 times more critical of my own game. And if what I say or what somebody else says hurts your feelings and you can't get over it, then that's on you. Right? If you're not your own most stringent critic of you, then you're not going to make it. You just won't. And so for Vance Joseph, he needs to be his own worst critic. He needs to understand what he did, what he didn't do, and he needs to fix those things. He needs to rectify those things. And if he can't get it done, then he's not the right man for the job. And he knows that. The one thing I appreciate about Vance, he knows. He gets it. He knows what a critical time this is in his career. And maybe that's why you hear the, like you said, the vocal nature. You hear him cussing out, you know, Paxton for not getting in the huddle. You hear him calling out Carlos Henderson for his hamstring and saying, hey, dude, you don't get on the field, you're not going to make the team. That's just the way it's going to work.
If you can impart a piece of wisdom or advice to this football team as they have the next 6 weeks sort of to themselves or you know, have to keep themselves accountable.
Right.
What advice would you give?
My strongest piece of advice would be that is that you want to be a great football team, then you need to make the sacrifices for the guys that you represent. You need to do the work. You need to do the preparation. You need to continue to make good decisions because this team is not about you. It's what Joe Gibbs used to say to us all the time when I played for the Redskins. Lose yourself. It ain't about you. It's about us. And every decision that you make going forward affects your football team. If you decide to go out and get drunk and get a DUI, guess what? That hurts the guys. You're letting every guy down. You're saying that my time is more valuable than your time and that I'm more important than you. And that is a recipe for losing football games. And it's that simple. So every decision you make, it's not, you're just not making a decision for yourself. You're making a decision for 53 guys, a big group of coaches. It's not just about your family. It's your extended family, which is your football team. And so, you know, that would be kind of the way I would look at these off seasons is everything you do affects everybody that is relying on you and counting on you. And it's not about you, it's about your football team. And so act accordingly.
Hopefully these guys do the right things.
Yeah.
No eating weed, Carlos Henderson. Don't do that. Stop smoking weed when you know it's time to come back because they will test you, right?
Right. All those things are part of this. And, you know, I mean, it's legal here, but it's not legal in the NFL. And you know, and I understand that a lot of people use it, and that's fine.
That's fine.
But, you know, if that's what you want to do, that's your choice.
Time and place.
Right. Just make sure you make decisions that every decision you make is going to affect your football team. So make the right decisions so that your football team isn't going to suffer.
Any big plans for the weekend, Mark?
For me?
For you?
No, hanging out with my granddaughters and making sure my yard work is done before I leave on Sunday.
Po-po.
That's right.
Love
that,
it.
That is right. That's all. That's it. Yard work, baby.
Enjoy your weekend. Mm-hmm. Find out the irrigation path least resistance.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Deliver. Hey, by the way, our father mows best.
Yes.
I'm gonna go pick out the tools for our winter,
nice.
And I'm gonna deliver those on Saturday.
Awesome.
Unbeknownst to the winner, so that's gonna be really cool.
That is really cool. Shout out to Sam's Number 3.
Yeah.
For having us at their downtown location. Appreciate everyone involved.
Big shout out to Mike, who's been here the whole show. We had breakfast with Mike.
No doubt. Appreciate you, Mike. Appreciate everyone out there with us. There's never an off season for Talking Broncos, and that continues with our guys, Pritchard and Cecil, coming up next.